Your contribution left a notice. Association with an image. Just credit time for showing up again. Attention wondered, I'm left with them. You know, they used to have an option on this app that you could like kick in with whatever song you wanted to. You could just play like, you know, 5-10 seconds. And if I'd have had that option, I would have played Helmet.
I thought it was at a Helmet concert there for a second.
Pretty close. It's pretty close.
they were up here recently.
Helmet,
I thought
was?
About going. Yeah, they came to George's. I thought about going to see him, but I passed.
I would have if I still lived over there. The Ville. The Cruella de Ville.
One it's way day, better Jeremy. Than
this butthole of a town I live in. I tell you what, the thing that bothers me about this town the most is the people. People here are just, yucky. They're just not good for the soul. Like, we live in this neighborhood. You know, it's a nicer neighborhood. It's right by the country club. We're probably the only people that live here that aren't members. Everybody's got a fucking golf cart. You know, you try to explain that one to a 3-year-old. No, we can't. We don't have a golf cart, honey. Because we don't have any fucking use for one. But so these little snotty little shit bags around here. And, you know, my daughter has not had a whole lot of friends. I mean, I'm kind of antisocial, and my wife, where she works, she's not allowed to fraternize with people outside of work. So, because we moved away from where all my friends and her friends and people are, we just don't know anybody over here. And, so was hanging out with these little kids in the neighborhood. And then, man, they've started like, they just don't come and get her to play. And the one thing I will say is she's younger by like a year and a half from even the youngest one. And so the youngest one that's not her sort of gets left out, but she doesn't want to come play with my daughter very much. They used to come over here because we were the only people in the neighborhood that had a trampoline. And they would come over here and jump on the trampoline. But as soon as that kind of went away, then we don't see them anymore. And it irritates me to no end. And it actually does more than that because I have issues from when I was a kid and I had little fucking kids leave me out of shit. And so it deeply bothers me and sort of came to a head yesterday. Literally, where I go with my daughter, we're standing outside and, you know, little, here they come, little fucking kids. And she goes, you know, she's, hey, can I come play? And the girl goes, oh, no, sorry. I have a friend over. All right. But then there's another kid that lives next door, and they literally walked right past us and started going, hey, we're going to go see if, you know, yada yada wants to go play. Yeah, he's going to come play, and we're going to have a big party. We're going to raise the roof. And my daughter's sitting there brokenhearted. She's the only kid in the neighborhood who's not invited. And so she is crying, and she goes to go in, and, I couldn't help myself. I went over there. I said, so what you're saying is that everybody in the neighborhood is invited except for her? I said, you guys are some great friends. I'm so happy that we live here with great friends like you. And I came and I slammed the door so hard that one of their parents came out and thought there was a car wreck in the road and didn't say anything to me until a little bit later we had gone out and we were walking around the neighborhood and the guy was outside. He's all right. He says, hey, what are y'all doing? I said, well, nobody's playing with my daughter. So he goes, now hold on, guy, hold on. It's not that they won't play with her. I said, no, it is actually. They literally said, oh, well, they're just kids. She just can't keep up with them. And I mean, he had a point there, but you know, I thought, and I walked back in, I said, First thing I said was, you know, if I was them and one of them had said something to my daughter and then slammed the door, very first thing I would have done is gone over there and said, what's going on here? You know, if I knew that my daughter was outside and some adult came and said something, you know, to them and then goes in and slams the door, my first move would have been like, hey, I'm going to go see what's going on. But that's not how it works here. They just talk about you behind your back. So then, but then I come in and I'm just fuming and those little fucking bitches. And my wife goes, you know, you're talking about like a 9-year-old girl. And that's not the youngest one. That's you're talking about a 9-year-old girl. I said, I know. I can't believe she's 9 and she's already a fucking bitch. And she goes, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you shouldn't call a 9-year-old a bitch. That's kind of the difference, I think, between one of the many differences between my wife and I. Maybe sort of in a general way that sort of woman that's thinking about that I shouldn't be setting that example while I'm thinking if anybody messes with my daughter, I don't care how little or big you are, how old or young, I'm not going to just sit there idly by while you literally, be shitty to her right to her face. I remember times when I was a kid and this is the big problem with it, that I need to just let her have her own experiences. And yeah, it sucks and kids can be cruel, but that's what builds character and all that. I know that that's how you should be, but that's not how I am. Because when I was a kid, I remember specific times. I remember a time when I was humming on the bus to myself very lowly. I didn't think anybody could hear me. And this one girl that was older that I always had a crush on turned around and said, "Who's humming?" And it scared me. And she never found out who it was. But I think about that. And I think about that sometimes when I'm humming to myself in a crowded space. I think to not hum very loud because that was so traumatic to me. So, you know, these are tough times in this nation, and you have to pick and choose your battles. And sometimes you gotta tell off the little kids. You gotta tell one of them did run home crying. That was another thing too. If somebody slammed the door and my daughter came home crying, again, the first thing I would do was go confront the other adult and say, what's going on here? But that's not how it works here. That's not how it works. And the same lady that wouldn't come talk to me because I made her daughter cry asked me if I had read Bill Clinton's new book. So these are the kind of people we're dealing with.
So their daughter said, raise the roof, though?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as appalling as that in itself is, it was like they were gloating about it. And I thought, you know, there have been plenty of times where they were shitty to her and I didn't say anything. But this time I was not happy. I was actually installing one of those doorbell cameras on the front of the front door of the house because of another incident that I had with somebody where I'm not going to talk about because I actually pulled my pistol. But we'll move on past that. Welcome to the Glenn Keck Show. I'm Glenn Keck, and with me as always is MAGA Dave. Party on, MAGA Dave.
Yeah, man. it's a party up in here.
Raising the roof. Well, don't invite my daughter. Or
don't worry, she's not invited. It's an adult party.
I fantasize about, like, I come in and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to buy a giant jungle gym and it's going to be 2 stories high. And when we build it, the other kid's going to see it. We're going to say, you can't come in here. We're going to raise the roof in here. That's what I fantasize about. My wife has to sort of say, hey, calm down. Because I seriously came in and was contemplating going to Sam's and spending like $1,500 on one of those big, massive play sets they have with the fort and the swings. And
that's what's known as rich revenge. Right there. Yeah. It's expensive.
But I'm revenge. Not rich, so it's more like debt revenge.
Credit revenge. Credit card revenge. I'm going to pay high interest on this for the next few years, but it'll be worth it.
Store interest on a store card.
Oh, zero because down?
Those motherfuckers.
0% APR won't have it the paid first off year.
In 6 months, but we'll say we will. 25% interest? Ha! Scoff at that.
I would have done it for 35, you jerks.
You know, and it's, you know, it's an interesting, the way that you interact with people changes when you have kids. This wasn't what I planned on talking about, but we'll go with it for a minute. You know, it's, I had kids later in life. I was 35 when I had my first kid. Okay. I'm only 38 now, and I'm about to be on my third one. So, I made up for lost times. Definitely. But I had kids later on in life, and I had them so late, as a matter of fact. How late was it? It was so late that I didn't think I was going to have kids. I didn't think I could have kids. And I had sort of built a lifestyle around that, even to the point that I had little sayings. Like I would say, well, one day I'm going to tell my nephews and nieces about this, you know. The things you sort of, I imagine that there's a lot of women that marched in the Women's March that can sort of identify with making peace with the fact that you're never going to have a child. And some of them probably would like to get pregnant just so that they could kill their baby so they could get in with the club of women that murder their innocent children in their womb. It was funny the other day I saw, and I think it was the Babylon Bee, that because what is it, Meghan Markle or whatever is pregnant, and so all the people in the media were like saying, people in the media were saying congratulations, like media congratulates Meghan Markle on glob of clumped cells,
right, growing in her body, that it's was funny stuff. One. That's a good but sight.
I had sort of had this whole identity where I was kind of a jerk, and I had a way with that I would treat people, and I didn't really take a whole lot of shit from people, and I still don't, but I have to be – kids are so aware. They're hypersensitive to what's going on around them. They really pick up on the undertone. They pick up on emotion. You know, all the time, my daughter will ask, like my wife and I, she'll be like, are you happy or are you sad? And a lot of times it revolves around whether or not she's getting in trouble. But I noticed, especially when she was young and now my son, who's only a year, if you cannot even say a word, and they can tell sometimes when you're upset, especially in public. And I'm one of those people that in public, if somebody is rude, I have OCD, and part of my OCD thing is I hate injustices. I hate when somebody breaks the rules, especially flippantly. And so a lot of times I'll say something, somebody cuts in front of me in line or whatever, that I'm notorious for. If I'm holding a kid, and I don't know why people would do this. I'm not that intimidating, but if I saw me, I wouldn't cut in front of me, especially if I'm holding a kid. I would never do that, but I have people do it all the time. And I will just start talking to my daughter and going, well, and I had this happen before. I think I said this in another episode, but it's happened more than a couple times where you know, that's what happens. Sometimes people are rude. You're supposed to wait in line and you don't cut in front of people because it's impolite. But my daughter will pick up on that it's an awkward, uncomfortable situation and it affects her. So there's a lot of things that I had developed over, you know, 35 years of being alive and now 38 where I was okay with who I was. I had made peace with it, all my mental illness and my issues and all that, problems with addiction and all these things, had made peace with it. It was okay with it. And now that I have my kids, it's all wrong. You know, I said a lot of things by sort of anger and intimidation. And I didn't fight with people or anything like that. But when you're in like the music business, a lot of times it can be about haggling or people trying to not pay you or people trying to book you. And then, you know, they'll double book or whatever. And so it pays to be able to not be a pushover. And I still think that I shouldn't be a pushover and that if you have kids, you shouldn't be a pushover, but there's different ways of handling things because there's a lot of things that I do that I've made peace with that I would never want my kids to do. And so it's interesting how you change as a person, how your children change as a person, because it's not anymore about me. It's not anymore about how I see myself. It's about how my kids see me. It's a constant barometer of getting outside of my own head and trying to see what it's like from their perspective. Now you have a kid that's a little bit older, so you can probably speak to this a little bit more even than I can. Having an adolescent changes you and some of your behaviors over time.
Yeah, I mean, it is different, but it isn't. I mean, it's really the same as when they're kids. They're learning so much, you know, all the time from you that you have no idea that they pick up on and realize they develop some of your same habits and things. As right. You get older, you know, you see the same things, good or bad habits. So it's you become even more self-aware as you get older, honestly. And you know, the more you deal with kids' stuff, like kids being kids, I think the softer, a little more laid back you get, because I don't know, other things get less important. And you like you said, you just see a lot of things differently, and maybe not out of, you know, you become more conservative, in my opinion. You become more, you know, what's best for my kid and how do I want them to be when they leave? Because it gets closer. I mean, my son, he's only 5 years away from 18, so that's not a long time to influence right. And teach him and all that. That's where I'm at right now. It's like you got to try and teach and learn him to prepare him for the world, I guess. And so there's a lot of, you know, I don't talk a whole lot of politics with him or anything just yet, because I still think he's fairly young to kind of grasp the whole thing. I mean, it's hard to grasp. I mean, parts of it's hard to grasp now, but the easiness of the stupidity of some of the left is pretty easy to see. I mean, he's 13 and he sees some of it, because I'll throw some stuff out there every once in a while, you know, bring something up and he'll, you know, he'll ask, why would somebody act like that? You know what I mean?
So even a kid can see.
Right. Yeah. So I know he at least, you know, the thing I really want him to have is like critical thinking and like, how to be nice to people, as far as yes sir, no sir, how to respect people, I guess would be the way to say it. And, you know, you go through, you know, I know every parent will regret not doing certain things with their kids or certain things they forgot to do or felt like they should have did this more or whatever. And that's kind of a fear, you know, because he was asking me one time, like, what do you fear, Dad? Because that's just kind of what kids ask. And I was like, I kind of fear, you know, failing at some things. I think men, you know, we don't fear just a whole lot of different things that some people might think are scary, but we fear of failing, for me anyway. And I think a lot of men is something that is a real fear, you know, whether it be something, you know, it's usually bigger things like raising your kids or a job or, you know, right. Being a husband or whatever. But I think that's probably the biggest fear men have is failing at something.
Right. Well, and this, you know, from what From what I've read in a few different places, this next generation, like his generation, is supposed to be the most conservative generation, I think, since like World War II or something like that. I was reading somewhere that this next behind millennials, Generation Z or whatever they're calling them, is going to be a more conservative. And it's kind of an ebb and flow. But yeah, I definitely, and I think it's good for your kids to see, that you don't want them thinking that you shouldn't be afraid of anything. So it's good for your kids to see sort of reality that there are things out there, because you grow up thinking that your dad is Superman. And I guess depending on who your dad is. But, most kids, they have this image of their dad that he's this, huge, larger than life. And then some of the biggest lessons I learned from my dad, I learned, from his failings, and not the fact that he failed, but the fact that of what he did after he failed, what he did after something fell apart. Because, it's one thing to be who you are whenever you're successful, whenever you're succeeding, whenever things are going your way. But, your real character shows in those times whenever life doesn't go your way and things fall apart and things do fall apart. That's one of my favorite poems. I think it's a Yeats poem. It's true. So just having an audience, it's interesting. Back when I drank a lot and did a lot of drugs, I used to sort of have this thing in the back of my head of like, I thought that maybe the world was a TV show like The Truman Show, where like I thought maybe people could see what I was doing when nobody was looking. It wasn't something I really thought or dwelt on, but I would at sometimes when I would be alone and say or do something embarrassing, I'd be like, well, it'd be funny if the whole world was a setup and people were watching me at all times, and they were, people that are like, oh man, look at what he's doing, we can all see him. And some of that transfers over to when you have kids, because you really do have an audience all the time. If I'm if I lose my temper, my kids see it. And it is the damnedest thing that they will imitate. Like, they will imitate the most embarrassing things about you. And it's a kind of a reflection at times. Because even though my kids are little itty bitty, I'll lose my temper, or I'll do something. I've quit, but I was smoking this vape. And it didn't have any tobacco. It was one of the, like when you do the vape things, they have some that are tobacco. And as a way to kind of quit smoking, you can go down in percentage. So you can get all the way down to like, 5% tobacco in a vape, and then you can have 0%. And so I would just get the 0% stuff, because after I had kids and quit smoking, cigarettes and all that stuff, I still had the kind of this nervous thing where I wanted to smoke. And so for a while I had this vape, and I was stressed out or whatever. It helped me relieve stress. Just the act of taking in a big puff of smoke, but my son started, he wanted to get that thing. If I ever set it down, which I mostly kept in my pocket or kept it up, but if I ever forgot about it and set it down somewhere, he tried to get it every time. If I let that thing out of my sight for 2 seconds, he was after it. And of course I didn't smoke around them a bunch, but I would step out the front door and leave the door open, because this smoke is not like a cigarette smoke. Or if we'd be outside or something. And then he started taking pins. He's one. He's like 1 year old, and he's like taking pins and you know, it's like, you little bastard. And then it's the funniest thing. Funny, ha ha. Also funny, not ha ha. But I play Xbox, and my son, for the first time, he was, I don't know, 8, 9 months, maybe a little 10 months, something like that. And he comes over and grabs the controller for the first time. Oh, he's so cute. And he goes and turns the TV, and he just starts going, like, just gesticulating wildly and making angry noises at the TV. And I thought, you little bastard. The two things that you imitate of me are me smoking and me getting angry playing video games. You know, it's like a window into all your the things you do wrong. And my kids, they'll imitate that shit. And it's like, yeah, even when you think nobody's watching, somebody's watching, and they're watching in a very certain way, because they're like little monkeys. They're learning to imitate, you know, that you do something and they imitate it. That's how they learn how to do things. And so I have really had to reevaluate my life and how, what I do and the things I do, and be very mindful of it. It's kind of nerve wracking at times, but then at other times it's so meaningful, meaningful beyond even what my comprehension of what meaning, you know, meaning is. So, you know, it's a great thing having children. And you learn so much about yourself. And I think it's a cool thing. But you got anything else you want to say about kids and parenthood?
No, man, I just think you know, there's a lot of these millennials that don't want to have kids, or they say they don't. I don't know. I feel like later on they'll have an urge to. I think that's just nature. That's how God made us. Right. But like you said, you really do miss out on a lot, in my opinion, by not having kids. You miss out on finding out a lot about yourself and a lot about, you know, just who you are, and it forces you to deal with things that you weren't, you know, probably ever going to deal with in some ways. You know, it really opened your eyes to who you are and how, what you want to be, you know?
Right. Yeah. The people that, I mean, I didn't want to, but yeah, I think that, and it's funny, 'cause I think some of these people that are these ardent sort of cucked liberals are going to, in their 30s, start having kids and start turning conservative. Mm-hmm. And realizing that prancing around looking like a fucking hipster, like tool bag, drinking soy until you get man boobs is like not any way to be. And then there's going to be those people who are just, they're awful human beings, and they're going to be awful parents, and they're going to create awful little shit kids. And, you know, so the world goes round and round. But we'll move on and get to one of the things that I wanted to talk about. And I know that earlier you and I had talked about this, actually. But, you know, I kind of thought, and, well, I've thought about saving this whole conversation for another day, and maybe it will we'll go a little long here, or maybe this will spill over into another deal. But I had been sort of dealing with this thing. I was a huge Nike fan, obsessed with it, and it goes back, as many things do, to my childhood. And I was just dirt poor when I was a kid, and my parents never could afford Nike shit. I was one of those kids that would borrow clothes from their friends, steal clothes from their friends, unfortunately, which got me into some bad situations when I was a kid. But
difficult situations.
It's a difficult situation. It's getting worse. I'm starting to sound like Columbo. Just a minute, sir. This is a difficult situation.
That's not a bad thing. I like Columbo.
All right. I want to go back and find this Tony Soprano clip. It's like in season 5, but he's talking to his brother-in-law Bobby and his sister. They're like out at this lake house, and they start talking about building the fucking wall. Build the fucking wall on the, you know, Tony Soprano's like an old school conservative type. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things, you know, and it's just kind of funny. I don't know, but yeah, this Nike thing. So when I got older and started getting to where I could buy my own clothes, I started, you know, I'd buy Nike stuff. It was, you know, it's people that buy their own clothes and buy nice clothes understand what an investment it is. It's not a cheap thing to go buy a new shirt, especially not a name brand. And I know that Nike is not at the top of the list, but they're not, it's not cheap. T-shirts cost like $45, you know, to get the shoes and the different things. So I have over the years amassed a pretty wide ranging Nike wardrobe. And so it actually absolutely devastated me when they did this Colin Kaepernick thing. And, you know, on the one hand, I feel like people are entitled to a political opinion. And, you know, I don't think that everybody should think like me. And I'm not going to boycott somebody. And I know there's a lot of conservatives that don't believe in boycotts. Fuck that. I don't play that bullshit. If the people on the left are going to do stuff like boycott, I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to boycott too. And I think that's, you know, you hear Ben Shapiro that they tap dance around. Well, I'm not going to boycott, but I think that the market forces should go. And that, yeah, no, you're talking about a boycott. You're saying, I don't want to call it a boycott, but I'm not going to buy their shit. It's a fucking boycott. You know, give me a break. But I'm not going to boycott. There's tons of actors out there who I know are liberals, either because they have to be or because they want to be, whatever. And that's fine. I'm not going to go, well, I'm only going to watch 100% conservatives on TV, because if I did that, I'd be watching some pretty shitty movies. There's not a whole lot of Scott Baio is not putting out a whole lot. You know, I've yet to see like the Scott Baio, James Woods, you know, what's
Drew Carey.
Carey. Angelina Jolie's dad's name.
John Voight.
You know, it'd be, hell, I mean, now that I'm talking about it, it'd probably be a pretty good movie. But, I'm not one of those people who goes, well, I'm only going to buy from conservatives. I'm only going to watch conservatives. I think that's ridiculous. I think that you should listen to people that disagree with you. It's so useful. And, you know, I don't know everything. So I'm willing to listen to other people. I'm willing to support people because I want people to support me regardless of my politics. And I get irritated when people do get singled out. Like the guy, I think his name is like Brandon Eich, that was with the Mozilla, and he loses his whole career just because he like donated to a charity that has to do with like family value. It's ridiculous. So I hate it when the left does it to the right. Now, I do think there's a difference when you're an outspoken, like Robert De Niro. I used to love Robert De Niro. Fuck that dude now. Alec Baldwin, used to really like Alec Baldwin. Fuck that dude, because they're not just people that have different opinions. They're people that are intolerant of anybody who disagrees with them. And so if you're one of these people that says, well, if you disagree with me, you're a racist, you're dumb, and you're sexist and all these things, well, then I can't support you, because I can't let my money go towards supporting you if you're just human filth like that. Now, we talk about liberals and extremists and say disparaging things, but we're really talking about a specific type of leftist. I don't dislike every Democrat. Matter of fact, I have plenty of friends who are Democrats. And I think that it's good to have two parties. I think it's good to have multiple points of view. When we're kind of talking bad about people on the left, we're talking about those people who are intolerant. They want to disparage anybody who disagrees with them. They want to label you a racist and a homophobe and a sexist. Not just that, you're stupid if you don't agree with them. Those people, it's a different thing. What I think Nike did by supporting Colin Kaepernick was despicable, because the problem with Colin Kaepernick is he doesn't have any kind of message. He is literally the embodiment of like the millennial generation of, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I'm super angry. Like, Colin Kaepernick has never dealt with police profiling. Never has. He was adopted by a wealthy family, lived a pretty privileged life, and then he was a millionaire right after college. You know, he doesn't know what it's like for the black man that's on the struggle. He doesn't get it. You know, Martin Luther King was a guy that knew the plight of African Americans at that time because he grew up in it. He dealt with it. It was a character building thing for him. He had all these, I've talked about this before, but he had all these downward forces that he had to overcome. And by overcoming them, he became this great leader of men. Very inspirational. Was he a man without faults? No. But, Colin Kaepernick started off his whole protest by wearing pig socks. You know, it should have been shut down at that point. He should have been labeled by the media as an idiot. And we should have never heard his name again because he was already at that point a backup quarterback. But that's not what happened, because ESPN, and they've shot themselves in the foot over it. But, you know, they start glorifying him. It starts turning into this race thing, yada, yada, yada. And you have a bunch of other very privileged people. I guarantee you, if you're an anchor at ESPN, you're probably not from the streets. You know what I'm saying? So these people that they it's funny to me, because to me, that's what cultural appropriation is. It's not somebody who's white acting like they're black. It's these wealthy upper class blacks acting like, because they're black, that they're from the streets, or they're urban, or they understand the plight. They don't, because they hadn't lived it. There's plenty more white people who grew up, you know, poor and grew up in the projects that know way more about it than you know, ESPN anchors, than Stephen A. Smith. And, you know, I'm sure that there's the case here and there of people that grew up poor and made something of themselves. But I would say on the whole, probably not. And so when I look at what Nike did by supporting Colin Kaepernick, they took an issue that was, I think, was fairly close to being sort of put to bed. Because even though Trump had continued to wade in on the anthem thing, and the NFL had it figured out, but they kind of wavered, and it was sort of this, because I'll be honest with you, I was going to watch football this year because I thought they had the anthem thing figured out. I thought it was all whatever. But part of the reason I don't watch football is because of what Nike did. And so I'll never give them another dime. But over the past couple weeks, I have been trying to sell my Nike gear. We're talking like, you know, a lot of gear here. And I was having trouble selling it. More trouble than I thought, because nice stuff. I take care of my clothes and really nice things. I have a coat that I paid $120 for brand new, and I couldn't get somebody to take $50 for it, or to give $50 for it. And I to the point where I kept marking stuff down. And then I've had people that, you know, started getting interested once I was basically getting ready to give it away. And then I thought about it and I thought, who am I hurting here? You know, because my whole grand scheme, my plan was that I was going to sell this Nike stuff. I was going to make all this money from it. And I was going to take that money and I was going to go buy Adidas. Thereby, I was going to undercut Nike sales because people weren't going to be buying new stuff. They'd buy used from me. And I was going to take that money and invest it in like Adidas. And I don't even know if Adidas is any different. I heard that they were actually trying to get Kaepernick. So who knows? But, I think that I am guilty of getting caught up in sort of the all the passions of the politics of the day and getting a little whatever. And, you know, I'm not somebody who can afford to burn my clothes, and I'm not somebody who can afford to just give them away for next to nothing. And so I'm not going to buy any more Nike clothes. But I'm not going to not wear the clothes that I've already bought. And I think that's what's going to hurt Nike is the long run. I think the people like me, and I know that there's a lot of people out there, because I've talked to quite a few people who are in sort of the same place. They were people who bought Nike clothes very regularly, and they're not going to get rid of the stuff they have now, but they're not going to buy any more. I think that's what they're going to get hurt in the long run. Now, what's your take on the Nike situation, Dave? You see somebody out wearing Nike, do you look at them and think, "Eh, fuck that guy," or do you think anything at all? Or do you read into it, or is it just a whole lot of, you know, much ado of over nothing?
Man. I don't know. I think it's probably, I look at it from a business point of view where I think Nike probably had some people who were probably millennials and younger people, or just, you know, people who liked Kaepernick's quote unquote cause or whatever, or thought it would be something that they could benefit off of. Somewhat to win some fans over, and there had to have been like some people in the upper echelon that pushed back on it, you know, because he is such a controversial figure. And I just think businesses that choose a stand or a controversial stand on something just come out and pick a side, so to speak, you know, in my opinion, isn't the brightest thing to do. I don't know. I think overall you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people have had Nike stuff, and now that they've done that, you know, they may disagree with it, but what are you going to sell and get rid of all your stuff? You know, I have some Nike stuff. I'd get rid of it if somebody give me some dough for it, probably. But I mean, right. Yet Nike has so many other avenues of revenue, you know, such as that all the colleges that they have under contract for uniforms and things, and people want that gear that they see the coach or the players wearing. You know, I used to work in sporting goods, and I know how it is that you got to have the stuff that the coaches and players are wearing. That's what people want to buy. They want the legit, whether it's Nike, Adidas, or Under Armour or whatever. They want the team stuff, you know, so they'll always have that. But I do think over time, especially with the, you know, internet being prevalent, and you can get stuff from smaller companies, you know, from anywhere, basically, I think over time they'll see it'll hurt them in sales, probably just in the general public.
Yeah, you know what I would love to hear? This would make my day. I would love to hear that, like, Adidas, you know, because I heard that Adidas and one other one, I don't think it was Puma, because I think that Puma is also, oh, maybe not. So it was Adidas and one other one. Adidas and maybe Puma or yeah, I think maybe it was Puma. But anyway, that they were both after Kaepernick, and that Nike sort of won the bidding war. What I would love to hear, is that like Adidas and Puma got together and they were like, hey, let's totally fucking troll Nike and let's make them think that it's going to be something big to get Kaepernick. And then we'll just totally watch them fucking crash and burn. I would love to, hear that they, you know, they
that was their plan the whole time.
Let's leak it to Nike that we're going after Kaepernick, and that it's, we think it's going to be a huge thing that turns the, you know, that turns the corner and puts us over the top with Nike. And then, of course they're going to step in and they're going to want to win that war. And then we'll just watch them fucking crash and burn. Cause I just don't see how it makes sense. You know, I just, again, you know, there was enough people that voted for Trump that he won the election. And this whole popular vote thing, I think it's horseshit. They keep busting Democrats. Have you noticed that they keep busting people for voter fraud and it's mm-hmm. never Republicans? It's always fucking Democrats.
Yep.
And I think that they could pull 3 million votes out of their ass for Hillary Clinton pretty fucking easily. And I bet you they did. I bet you that a good number of those popular and even Trump said it. They, well, I bet if we counted the real votes, you know, you've got counties in like California that are reporting like 144% of the, you know, people are registered to vote. There's like places all over California where they're reporting like 100% of people are registered, are not registered, but are voting or already turning in their, but I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. So, but you're, it's not, see, cause it's one thing to say, well, Republicans buy shoes too. It's another thing to say that we live in a country where Donald Trump was elected. So if you elected Donald Trump, that this sort of myth that I think the Democrats like to push, that people were just reluctantly elected Trump, that Hillary was, they just kind of made a mistake by nominating Hillary, and she just wasn't a good candidate, and Trump sort of won because he cheated and yada, 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 that there was these lukewarm vote, you know, that Trump had any lukewarm voters, I think is a pretty ridiculous idea. And if you're wondering what that sound was, I'm walking around with my son asleep in this boba. He, little bastard, won't go to sleep now, just laying in the bed. I have to wear him in this little boba thing and he goes to sleep. And usually the sound of my voice keeps him asleep, but of course he just interrupted in. But yeah, in a country where people elected Trump, and what I was, the point I was trying to make was, I don't think there's a whole lot of lukewarm Trump voters. I think that people that voted for Trump, and I think you can tell when you look at his rallies, and it's going to be hilarious because Bill and Hillary can't afford to pay enough people to fill up a fucking arena for them. I guarantee you that shit gets shut down pretty fucking quick with their whole little tour. But you can tell when Trump does these rallies, these people aren't lukewarm. They didn't just vote for him of like, well, I guess he's the lesser of two evils for me. I'm sure there were some of those people, but I bet it's a small percentage. And so those kind of people are going to have an effect. And I just don't see how you're Nike and you look at ESPN, who crashed and burned when they started doing the social justice war bullshit, and the NFL, who was supposed to be recession proof, that fell apart when they started doing this social justice warrior bullshit. Because the problem with it is it's a lot of half-cocked bullshit. These people in the NFL, they want to talk about they want to, you know, if you don't agree with them, you're racist. Well, that's dumb. Most of the things that these people say that they're at, and by these people, I mean players. I don't mean any race, but most of the things that these NFL players, who by and large are they're guys who smash their heads into each other. They're not the best and the brightest out there, but most of the things that they say they want, it's already like that. Most people aren't racist. Trump voters aren't racist just because they don't agree with you. People aren't all the bad things you can think of just because they don't agree with you, with all the dumb shit that you come up with. And that's why it's insulting to most people. That's why people that love football stopped watching the NFL, because they don't like a player who has lived a pretty privileged life. You know, even if you grew up poor, which a lot of us did, you became really fucking rich. That never happened for me. I didn't grow up and when I was 21 years old, become a millionaire. It didn't happen. So, you know, no matter how rough you had it, you didn't, you know, you got to do what you love and you're playing a sport. So, you know, it's always funny to me when somebody like LeBron James, when they interview him, like he has anything to say. It's like, okay, so if LeBron James is some intellectual based on what? The fact that he's rich and famous? Okay, so then by that token, Donald Trump is way fucking smarter than you because he's way richer and way more famous. You know, so by your own reasoning, you know, by your own reasoning of what makes you intelligent, you know, the people that you're talking about.
He's a very
intelligent.
He's a very stable genius. I think they believe the stuff they read out there and see on the news, some of them, you know. They don't have time to really, if you're an NFL player, you don't have time to delve into a whole lot of it and check stuff out, really, probably, you know, your job is to be a football player and to compete at that level, it better be your job, you know, or you're
right. Well, LeBron James didn't go on and studying, you know, gun violence facts. Right. He's shooting free throws because you have to be the best in the world. You have to dedicate your life to that one fucking thing, you know, so he doesn't have all the facts, but go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was just going to point out an example of something that, you know, in the Huffington Post, which is quite an entertaining read at times. This headline, I like to go to their opinion section if I need a good laugh, you know, and just the absurdity. If you need a good example of the absurdity of the left, you can go to the Huffington Post and look at their opinion stuff.
Right.
And so I've got this one. It says, this is a guy, what's his name? Mark Lamont Hill.
Oh, geez.
And yeah. He says the headline, the title of the article is "White People Stop Using 911 to Oppress Black People." And so, wait, it gets better. I'm going to read the first sentence in the article. Says, "If there's one thing white people seem to love, it's calling the police on black people who are just going about their daily lives." So, and he goes through some, I guess this woman called the police on a 9-year-old black kid.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he details that. And then he's got another one here. This is a great line I thought was funny. "White people have the legal right to call the police, but doing so for innocent victimless actions not only inconveniences black people, but places our very lives on the line."
Yeah, because if you're not doing anything wrong, the cops are going to show up and they're going to shoot you down. Yeah, now, what's funny that I guess, and that guy is he's a CNN contributor. He's a moron.
Oh yeah,
he's like on MSNBC what I wish that he and he gets it. He's just not genuine enough to put it together. I think he's probably smart enough, but not genuine enough. This is what happens when you glorify the victim culture and you tell women that they don't have to have any evidence to accuse people of something. This is inevitably what happens. This is what happens when you have a Dr. Ford who everybody wants to lend instant credibility and make her famous and give her millions of dollars for basically coming forward and making baseless allegations. So that's what you encourage. So this lady sees that and, you know, whatever is wrong in her own life, because obviously, you know, you're going to report a 9-year-old for that because they touched you. You've got issues of your own, but she saw, how lauded and how, you know, these people treated Blasey Ford, whatever. I'm not going to call her doctor anymore. I don't even think she's an actual doctor, but maybe she is. Who cares? But Christine Ford, you know, you see how she was treated. And if you're somebody that has a mental illness, you have problems, you look at that and you think, well, being a victim pays. And so, you know, this is the outcome. It has nothing to do with fucking white people. It has to do with a victim culture that you yourself, Mr. Lamont Hill. Lamont! Hey, Lamont! This is what you created. You people created, because the same person that's writing that damn sure wrote that all victims need to be believed. Well, this is why you can't say that. This is why all victims must be believed is hyperbole, because they don't. Because this lady said she was a victim, but you weren't going to believe her. Well, why? Because it's this intersectionality of, well, she is a white woman, but he is a young black kid. So he's higher on the totem pole of victim. He's a victim of her, you know, but this is the backlash. This woman is, I guarantee you, is not, probably not a conservative. I don't know personally, but I would guess, because that victim culture, you know, it's interesting. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'll let you get back to it. But I was thinking about this the other day. I've got a friend I hadn't talked to in years, and I kind of lost touch with him. And, you know, he and I suffer from sort of the same problems. We're both lazy as hell, and we both have problems with addiction. Now, I sort of made the best of my problems by, you know, playing music. It was a shortcut to not doing work in a lot of ways. And it was something I was good at. And it was a profession where addiction was perfectly acceptable and sometimes expected. But he sort of has stumbled through life, and he's in recovery and stuff now. And it was interesting talking to him. Because the difference between him and you see these like Antifa, these socialists that they're lazy and they're privileged and they're whiny. And the difference between those guys and like my buddy knows he's lazy. My buddy knows that he's got issues with addiction and mental illness and all this, but he doesn't blame anybody but himself. He doesn't blame anybody but his fucking self when he gets up and looks in the mirror. He knows that his number one enemy that he has to overcome every day is himself, is his natural, you know, tendencies and urges and addictions. That's what being accountable. That's what I do every day. I know that the person I have to overcome is not some made up boogeyman of somebody that has been oppressing me before I was born and my ancestors and yada, yada, yada. I'm my own worst enemy. And that's the difference between, I think, people that are have that, and I don't even think he's a conservative, but have that mindset versus somebody who is lazy and has problems in their life, and they blame somebody else. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No. You know, talking a little more about the victim mentality here, here's another quote from this article, which is hilarious, by the way. Many white people are not calling the police out of fear, but to exert their authority and privilege. This is just so, so great. And he goes on. I mean, it's so absurd. The whole thing is just like, you know, these white people are, anytime they encounter a black person, they automatically call the police to deal with just them being black. Not for any reason other than they, you know, like here's another one. When white people call or threaten to call the police on black people, they are flexing the power to possibly determine whether a black person lives or dies.
Oh, jeez. You know, the funny thing too is that it's all lost on this guy. But the simple act of him writing that article is him exerting the power that he feels from being a victim. You know, he feels like that he's a victim and everybody else that's like him is a victim. And so it's not that somebody's calling the police because they do feel threatened and that's what the police are there for. It's somebody calling the police to oppress them. But in doing so, he's hoping to dissuade somebody who might otherwise feel like they need help from getting help. So he's literally doing, you know, doing the thing that he's accusing people of doing. And that's what happens. That's what happens when you live in hyperbole. That's what happens when you start saying that every white person that would call the police on a black person has some kind of bad intention. You know, are there cases where people do that? Yeah, but it's not a color thing. There's black people that call the cops on black people. There's black people that call the cops on white people. There are just assholes out there who call the cops because they're assholes. And, you know, to try to put to try to dissuade somebody, because how is this guy going to, he's not going to give a shit, but, you know, who is going to hold him accountable when somebody thinks, oh, you know, I feel like I'm in a bad situation here. I want to call the police, but I don't want to be racist and I don't want to exert my power. I guess I'll just let it slide. And then they, you know, they have something negative happen to them. There's no, you know, when you play with stuff like that and you treat the police, who the vast majority, 98, 99% of all police interactions out there every day, because there's hundreds of thousands of police officers all across the country, and the vast majority of their interactions with the public are good, and they're there to help people. And the few incidents that happen, you know, here and there, where, because, hey, are there cops out there that are assholes? You're damn right. But, I just reject the idea that there are this execution squad that's going out and murdering innocent people. Because every one of those videos that you see, well, I say everyone, I've seen, you know, there's always the cases out there where legitimately the police are using excessive force. There are the cases out there, but then a lot of them are like the people won't comply. They're fighting back. I was always taught to be respectful to the police, and I have dark skin and I have been profiled by the cops before, but every single time I was always, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Whatever. And I'm still here, you know? Now I'm not going to compare what my experience, of growing up poor in a small town, to somebody in the inner city. And I'm sure that the police, again, there's bad cops, but there's also they're putting their life truly on the line every day. And just as many, if you look at I don't have any numbers to back this up, but I'm just willing to bet that if you look at the numbers, there's probably more police officers that are shot by criminals than criminals that are shot by police officers. As much as somebody like that, this fucking tool bag, Lamont Hill, wants to say that every time you call the cops, you're putting somebody's life in danger. You're damn sure putting the cops' life in danger every time they go out onto a call, every time they go out and try to help people, because that's what they're trying to do every time. You know, and it's like you really hurt your own case when you just try to say that every time a cop gets called, it's, you know, it's not justified. The crime stats don't support that. And it's ridiculous. It's hyperbolous and it's irresponsible. And it's just a symptom of a victim culture. And I guarantee you that Mark Lamont Hill is somebody that feels powerful in that he is a victim. I think he probably takes a certain pride in the fact that he feels he's oppressed. I think he probably, the only reason why he probably gets any of the attention that he gets is because he plays the victim. So it works out very well for him. But if you actually want to look at critical thinking, which is what most journalists should be talented in, he's obviously lacking, because he has a very, I can't imagine being the kind of person that would sit down and write something like that. Honestly, I can't imagine being in that state of mind where you look around the world, you're a successful person. Number one, he's successful. So he doesn't have the excuse, because there's plenty of people out there who life has shit on them, chewed them up, spit them out, and they probably have a legitimate bitch that things aren't fair. But Mark Lamont Hill, shit's worked out for him. He's pretty successful guy, all things considered. And the fact that he can sit down and he can look around in the world and that's what he sees, I mean, it says more about him than it says about anybody he's talking to, because he's just speaking pure hyperbole, you know, because he's wanting to go off half-cocked and he's wanting to irresponsibly go out there and spread a message that could get somebody hurt and probably will, you know, and he's not going to be held responsible for it, because at the end of the day, he's, you know, he's always going to be the bigger victim. And it's just sad. People like him, are why, they're the part of the, left that you cannot reason with. You're never going to find common ground with that person, because to find common ground with them is to take power away from them. To compromise and to try to work something out with them is to take power away. And they will hold on to that power, you know, with everything they have, because it's what makes them feel strong. You know, so if you were able to get somebody like that, sit down at a table and say, hey, look, you know, let's end. You want to fight racism? Let's end it together, but let's fight real racism. Well, just in that statement to him, it would threaten everything that makes him who he is, would threaten his entire identity. you know, and so those are the people that you will never be able to sit down and compromise with. They'll always be on the far end of the spectrum, not because of their experiences, but because it's where they draw their own identity from. It's where they feel strong. Because all things considered, if everything was equal, nobody would be interested in him if he wasn't playing this victim thing, if he wasn't talking to a crowd in the Huffington Post crowd of people that are sympathetic, you know, because the things that he are talking about are idiotic. They're ludicrous. They're, you know, they're just stupid. he's a stupid person to think how he is or how he does.
It's funny to read it. It's like what you would write if you were going to write a satire thing, kind of making, you know, like we were talking about Jim Acosta earlier, and like Jim Acosta is what a Saturday Night Live reoccurring character should be. Right. Like every few weeks they should have a, because, I mean, the guy just keeps churning out this hilarious material. I mean, it's just, it's pathetic. But if you look at it like if you look at it from a comedic point of view, it's hilarious. The stuff he says, it's almost, you almost have to wonder, okay, I know he's that stupid. But, like, if you didn't know, you would just think, man, maybe the guy, this is his thing. This is his little shtick, you know? And like you said, you know, I'd have more respect for him if it was
shtick. But he takes himself like, way too seriously.
Right.
He takes himself like way if he was like, okay, seriously.
If he accepted his role, like, okay, I'm just going to be this guy, you know, and it'll be funny. I'll have my fame and, you know, people won't really take me seriously. But instead, it's all that, but he doesn't realize how stupid he is.
Right. I mean, this literally, Jim Acosta is somebody that if you really were able to talk to him off the record and you said, you know, hey, dude, what you're doing is brave. I mean, you're putting yourself on the line. Just like what soldiers do. I guarantee you he'd go, yeah, no, exactly like that. I think even worse. I think I'm in more danger than what soldiers are. I think I'm a bigger hero because I'm fighting for the truth. And you know, did you hear about the latest thing he did? Did you read about or hear it all about the most recent?
Where the kid was acted, he did the body slam thing.
No.
And
let me see. Oh. There's this thing that they do on. There's this thing that they do on Twitter now, where they say when Jim Acosta will do, because he's always tweeting about himself, so people will say, "Dear Diary." You know,
right.
With Jim Acosta, and I was trying to see if I can find this thing, but he was getting on and whining, I guess last night, and somebody in the Trump administration that worked, I think he was part of Melania's group, you know, put out press stuff for Melania, and he got on and said that was one of the first things he said was "Dear Diary," or Jim Acosta put out a tweet, and this guy, I forget his name, Josh something or another, but he comments, or he retweets the tweet and says "Dear Diary," and with Jim Acosta's tweet. So Jim Acosta, who this guy had never talked to before, DMs him and says, "Fuck you." And this guy, like, he let like the Daily Caller, or somebody, he let them get on. They let him log into his Twitter so that they could see for sure. And it was like, well, it looks like, yeah, here we go. I just found it. CNN, this is from Daily Caller. CNN White House correspondent Jim Acosta late Thursday night sent a vulgar direct message on Twitter to a former staffer in Donald Trump's administration. "Fuck you," Acosta wrote to Justin Caporal, the former director of operations for First Lady Melania. Caporal shared the message on Twitter and later allowed the Daily Caller News Foundation to log into his account and view the message. The vulgar message appeared to be the first time either Acosta or Caporal had messaged each other. And so what Acosta had tweeted was, "Tonight, the Trump campaign White House turned up the music so loud, the press risers were vibrating. Nearly impossible to do live TV. I suppose the White House loves those kinds of shenanigans, but I wonder if it's security concern for the USS for the USSS or local law enforcement, they can't hear either." And so this Justin guy commented, "Dear Diary," and Acosta DMs, "Fuck you." And so then the guy starts retweeting, you know, screenshots it. And so then Acosta tweets, "Hey, buddy, I thought you were an old friend from the campaign days. I'm sorry. Hope I didn't offend you. Have a good night and take care." Because the guy tweeted, "Acosta, you owe me an apology." this is how seriously he takes himself. And then he can't even own up to it. He can't even own up to the fact, because I guarantee you that Acosta knows who that guy is. I guarantee fucking to you, he knows that he damn sure wasn't his buddy. And I bet it was just a knee-jerk reaction. Acosta gets on there and sees that somebody from the Trump administration is fucking with him. And he says, fuck you. And then whenever he puts it out there and makes a big deal out of it, Acosta goes, oh, hey, buddy, thought you were an old friend. You thought he was an old friend? Seriously? What a bullshit excuse. I got no respect for Jim Acosta. I don't advocate for violence, but the fact that he feels like his life is ever in danger at these Trump rallies where Trump crowds have never been violent. They were always the ones who were attacked. And, you know, it's like if Acosta wants to feel his life is in danger, put on a MAGA hat and go walk into an Antifa crowd. You know, then you'll see what it's like to fear for your fucking life. But, you know, it's pathetic. It really is. It's how sanctimonious these CNN cucks are. I can't fucking stand it. And it's so hard to say, but he is probably the cuckiest of them all. I mean, it's hard with, like, you got Don Lemon, Chris Cuomo, you got this Chris Cizilla or whatever, and Anderson fucking Cooper. I mean, CNN is just a cesspool for low testosterone and sanctimonious jerk-offs. These are like the worst of the worst out there. It is literally, as my sons are getting older, every once in a while I'll turn on CNN and say, look, if you ever feel like you're anywhere near what any of these guys do, you need to change fucking course, because these guys are a roadmap from where you need to stay away from. Man, they're just the worst. Because it's like the bad part isn't that, you know, I mean, the fact that they're a propaganda network, I don't like that about them. The fact that they're 100% negative about Trump, I don't like it about them. But the part, because it's like MSNBC is that same way. But I think the difference, and I don't like MSNBC at all either. But I think the big difference is that the CNN guys are so fucking sanctimonious. You know, I mean, you want to talk about putting, you know, get down from your fucking cross, these people. It's just, I mean, the fact that they take themselves so seriously. I mean, I swear to God, every one of those guys thinks they're Walter fucking Cronkite, or they think, you know, they're Bob Woodward or whatever. I mean, and really they're just as hacky as it gets. I mean, if journalism is ever saved, which I mean, who knows, but I promise you, they'll look back on this time as just sort of the Wild West for pussies and for compromised news. It's just a time whenever it didn't matter if you were talented. It just mattered if you were sort of this victim, I don't know. It's sickening, man. It's a cesspool, and it churns my fucking guts to see these people. I don't know, man. We've gone a little bit long here. Do you want to say anything about fake news in closing?
No, man. I think that little article was pretty good. I mean, I'll try and have more of those the more podcasts we have. I like to find those articles like that and read them just because of the absurdity of it. So should have some more fun stuff.
I'll try to be quieter and not jump in so much when you're reading them. So that stuff is just the stuff that sets me off.
Well, that's another reason I pick it, too, just to set you off a little bit.
I'll tell you what really grinds my gears.
What grinds your gears?
Well, Maggie Dave, I think it's been a You know, I think it's been a good podcast. People may disagree, but I don't. Probably most people won't get this far. An hour and 20 minutes. An hour and 20 minutes out, they probably won't be hearing any of it at this point. And you know, I know a lot of podcasts don't have crying children break in or trail off mid sentence because they think an intruder just broke into their house. But that's where we're different. You never know what's going to happen.
That's right.
We're the wild card. We're the wild card of podcasts, and you never know what you're going to get.
That's right.
But I guarantee you. What's that?
One night, you know, you listen to this, and we may be using the bathroom or something. I mean, you just never know.
Yeah. Maybe playing video games.
Yep.
While and losing my train of thought constantly. So my dad can always tell whenever we're talking, and I'm like playing video game. You want me to call you back? Yeah, that's cool. So yeah. What? What'd you say?
Oh, so you're playing video games. All right, whatever. I'll just call you
later. Dad, I'm always playing video games, especially after Red Dead Redemption comes out next week.
Yeah, I saw where that's coming out. I know you'll
Cowboys from Hell.
I know you'll be unattainable for about 3 or 4 days there.
Well, I'm probably going to have to do a lot of my playing at night with that because I'm not going to want to be interrupted. I've thought about moving the kids have this huge playroom here. This like a huge den that we really should have made the living room, but I had my heart set on making a playroom for them, but they rarely play in it. And it's got a pretty big TV in there. I've thought about just making the playroom my big video game room, but I don't know how long that would last. I found a place that I could – there's a fireplace in there. I find a guy that I can get a rick of wood for $50 from this guy. So I think I'm going to go get a rick of wood and start burning fireplace.
That's the way to do it, man. But, I got to have somebody clean mine or something.
We had a guy come clean ours, and it leaks now. And I've had the guy come out like 3 different times, and he just keeps making excuses. Well, you know, this stuff kind of happens with houses as they're settling. I'm like, yeah, well, it didn't leak before you came, and now it leaks. So, I mean, I don't know how much this had to do with the house settling.
Maybe it's one of those
and
things.
He had already had to, like, fix something up there and do some kind of... And he was like, well, maybe I'll have to call Brick Mason. Well, you know what? Yeah, that's going to be on you, though, because, again, it was fine before you cleaned it. It's hard to get good work done these days. But, well, for the Glenn Keck Show, signing off, I'm Glenn Keck, and this is MAGA Dave.
Yeah, man.
And put your kids to bed and have a good night or day or whatever time you're listening to this, America. Thank you.
Adios.
Oh, wait. I'll end it like Mark Dice. I got to find something. Like he always does that. And I will see you soon. Everybody, the good ones, the good like YouTube or podcast guys, like Gavin always says, I like you more than a friend. So I've got to come up with something that's all my own and original. But until then, I like you more than a friend, and I will see you.